The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Scottish Government has released a new Charter of Rights for people affected by substance use. The charter was developed by an independent commission called the National Collaborative, which started work back in 2022. Tell you what, here's a short explainer that was put together by the Collaborative along with the Health and Social Care Alliance Scotland.
The National Collaborative has consulted extensively with people affected by substance use, including family members and carers, as well as service providers to co-design a Charter of Rights. The Charter of Rights aims to help people to know their rights and to know what support they can expect to receive. Human rights are for everyone. There are 7 key rights in the Charter, drawn from existing law as set out in the Human Rights Act, and rights which would be put into our law by the proposed Scottish Human Rights Bill. The right to life. Everyone's right to life is protected by law. Steps must be taken by services and organisations to protect people's lives, especially when they're at risk. For example, service providers should put plans in place to support somebody leaving residential, justice, and inpatient settings who may be at higher risk of drug-related deaths. The right to the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health. Everyone has the right to receive health and care services that offer an availability of choice, that are affordable and within reach, that are person-centred, and that are of the quality needed. Everyone should be treated fairly and equally, without stigma and discrimination, whatever their health needs and wherever they are in Scotland. For example, people should not be turned away from health and care services because they're using drugs or have used drugs in the past. The right to an adequate standard of living. Everyone has the right to access services and things which enable them to live in dignity. This includes the right to adequate food, clothing, and housing, to ensure their basic needs are met, keep people out of poverty, and enable them to take part in their community life. For example, access to social security should be available if required. The right to private and family life. Everyone has the right to respect for their family and private life. This protects people's dignity and their rights to make decisions about their own life. Family life includes the right to have and maintain family relationships. It covers the right not to be separated from your family and to maintain contact if your family is split up. For example, a parent's substance use should not be the only reason for removing a child from parental care or preventing contact. The right to a healthy environment. This was recently recognised by the United Nations in response to a growing awareness of the importance of the environment to health and well-being. It means that people should have access to clean and safe environments in which to live and work. The right to freedom from torture and other cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment or punishment. This right protects people from treatment that causes them a lot of pain, physical or mental suffering, or which makes them feel worthless or hopeless. For example, medication should not be withheld as a means of control or punishment in prison or police custody. The right to freedom from arbitrary arrest or detention. People should not be detained solely based on their substance use. Diversion from prosecution should be prioritised for minor substance-related offences. Advocacy. Advocacy services provide information, advice, support, and representation. Advocacy can support you to get your voice, views, and wishes heard, and explain more about your rights. Complaints and feedback. If your rights or those of someone you care for are not being met, you can feed this back to the service or make a complaint. The Charter provides further advice on how to find an advocacy service and how to make a complaint.
The Charter of Rights for People Affected by Substance Use was officially launched on December 11th. Let's hear some audio from that event. Here's the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk.
Today's launch of the Charter of Rights for People Affected by Substance Abuse is the fruition of hard work, of commitment and dedication to changing things for the better. Yesterday was Human Rights Day, with a reminder that human rights belong to everybody, and that includes people affected by substance abuse. I welcome Scotland's vital leadership on this issue to increase awareness and to drive action that is based on evidence and on people and their lived experience. The Charter represents a shift away from punishment and towards prevention, treatment, and support for those affected by drug use in line with the international guidelines on human rights and drug policy. The Charter references key human rights, specifies how they apply in practice for people affected by substance abuse, and identifies avenues for people to turn to for support and remedy. It focuses on the person and not only on the drug use disorder. Input from the community and from people who use drugs, reflecting the unique needs of different groups, was crucial to get to this point. This is a truly transformative approach that will help to ensure that drug policy is more humane and ultimately more effective. And it is desperately needed because the previous approach, focused on criminalization, has been a moral, practical, and societal failure. It has been punitive and destructive, with record numbers of drug-related deaths and more people than ever with drug use disorders. I urge all actors, government bodies, healthcare providers, and community organizations fully to implement the Charter. Harm reduction measures such as drug consumption rooms and supervised injection facilities can prevent drug use disorder and related deaths. Prioritizing people over punishment means more lives are saved. I call on other authorities around the world to follow Scotland's example and embark on human rights-centered reforms to their drug policies. You have my full support.
Now, here's Marie Nouget, Head of Research and Communications at the International Drug Policy Consortium.
My name is Marie Nouget. I'm here representing the International Drug Policy Consortium. For those of you who don't know IDPC, we are a global network of 200 NGOs that come together to promote drug policies grounded in social justice and human rights. And one of our core objectives is to promote and facilitate the participation of civil society and people most affected by drug policies in the design and implementation of policies that affect them. So I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to reflect on the Charter of Rights today. And I would like to start by applauding the adoption of this really powerful document. As you know better than I do, there has been an alarming surge in the number of drug-related deaths over the past year in Scotland, but also globally. And all over the world today, there is a growing recognition that the traditional approach to drug policy, which is grounded in prohibition, interdiction, stigmatization, and policing, is just not working. In particular, the ongoing criminalization of drug use and related activities greatly contributes to widespread human rights violations. In addition to creating significant barriers in access to services, it also facilitates police harassment and violence, arbitrary arrests and detention, and discriminatory practices that are targeting specific groups on the basis of their race, of their gender, and of their socioeconomic status. And so it's not surprising that one of the main calls from the Charter of Rights is to shift away from criminalization and stigma and towards a health and rights-based approach to drug use. At IDPC, we welcome the decision by the Lord Advocate to issue directions to the police not to charge anyone for simple drug possession. This is definitely a major step towards the effective implementation of the Charter. Worldwide, we have seen movements towards expanding access to life-saving harm reduction interventions, with service providers and peer workers working tirelessly to adapt their services to respond to the needs of people who use drugs. We've also seen increasing moves towards drug policy reforms, including decriminalization, but also legal regulation, to put an increasingly complex and dangerous unrelated market back under control. Often, these policy changes have only been possible thanks to the sustained advocacy of civil society, and in particular people who use drugs. They know what they want, they know what they need, and it's high time that decision makers listen to these demands. And that's why this charter is so important, because it's been drafted after serious consultations with people with living and lived experience of drug use. And the end result is a document that is able to distill international human rights obligations into concrete actions that should be undertaken to fulfill the human rights of people who use drugs. When talking about human rights with people who use drugs from different parts of the world, it often becomes apparent that some of the main issues that they are facing in their lives do not relate to drugs at all. They relate to lack of access to housing, to food insecurity, to unstable migration status, to mental illness, to gender inequality and violence, to racial discriminations, to past trauma. And these multiple layers of vulnerability and marginalization are exacerbated by criminalization and systems of oppression. The Charter of Rights also recognizes this, with an approach that goes way beyond access to drug services, but also recognizes the right to an adequate standard of living, the right to family life and privacy, the right to a healthy environment, the right to be free from arbitrary arrest, detention, and torture. This is the approach that is also promoted by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, as well as the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health in her excellent report on drug use, harm reduction, and the right to health. The challenge now is to ensure that the Charter of Rights is actually implemented on the ground, with a real commitment from the government of Scotland to protect the rights and dignity of people who use drugs. And so I wanted to finish this intervention with four recommendations. First of all, the full implementation of the Charter of Rights will require political leadership from the government of Scotland. And with this political leadership comes the issue of funding. The only way for the Charter to be adequately implemented on the ground is if sufficiently budgetary resources are allocated towards health, social, legal aid, and other services for people who use drugs. Secondly, we call on the Government of Scotland to ensure that the Lord Advocate's directions to not prosecute people for simple drug possession is effectively implemented on the ground, ensuring that people are no longer punished for drug use. This is an essential step to the protection of the rights of people who use drugs. Thirdly, we have sometimes seen pushback from the general public and government authorities and implementers when policies on drugs shift towards health and human rights instead of punishment. So the implementation of the Charter will likely require a lot of sensitizing towards service providers, towards different government authorities, towards law enforcement and criminal justice officials, and towards the general public. There's already many campaigns that exist that could be used to do this. For example, the Support Don't Punish campaign that IDPC coordinates every year and mobilizes communities from all over the world to promote a health and rights-based approach to drugs. And finally, the ongoing involvement of people with living and lived experience of drug use will absolutely be essential for the implementation of the Charter. It may also be necessary to regularly review the contents of the Charter to ensure that it continues to reflect the evolving realities and the needs of people who use drugs.
That was Marie Nuget, Head of Research and Communications at the International Drug Policy Consortium. Before her, you heard UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk. They were speaking at the launch of Scotland's Charter of Rights for People Affected by Substance Use. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Scottish Drugs Forum held a webinar December 18th to discuss the Charter and what it will mean for service providers and for people who use drugs. One of the speakers was Jason Wallace, Living Experience Engagement Senior Officer at the Scottish Drugs Forum.
In terms of the Charter, I'm just going to speak a wee bit about the next stages and what our roles and responsibilities will be. And you've seen Fae Allen's presentation there that we had identified seven key rights that are sort of recognised within national and international law, and that there's not enough time a day to talk about all of them. But one of the things I would say is, one of the first bits of what we need today, rights holders are aware, they actually understand how the rights might come into play when you're engaging with statutory services or third sector partners or anything like that. I think we've got a lot of work to carry out to make sure people actually know what their rights are and understand their rights. And in terms of the duty bearers, I think for duty bearers who will be staff working in services, delivering services, again, we need to make sure the duty bearers are aware of what the rights are within the charter and how that might apply to their service in particular. And I know through a lot of the work that I've been involved in through managing the Living Experience Engagement Group, that there's a lot of great work at the moment happening, and it probably sits within this charter in some of the key rights. But I think the right I'll kind of speak about today is the first right that we have in the charter, and that's the right to life. And the reason I'm speaking about that is because that right, the right to life, is protected by Article 2 of the Human Rights Act, and it's already part of law in Scotland. And if we think about stuff through the right to life, then many services will currently be delivering different harm reduction methods, which is aimed at actually preventing people from dying prematurely in terms of drug-related deaths. So they'll be delivering different interventions, naloxone and such. But I think what we need to think about is, in order to make these rights available to everybody and properly embed them in our policy and our service and our practice, there's going to need to be changes. And these changes might be difficult for some individuals or some organisations, but I think what we need to remember is this is an individual's rights. There is, people don't get to choose whether somebody has a right upheld or no. If you choose not to uphold somebody's rights, then there's a real big issue there in terms of the individual. But in order to sort of develop, plan, deliver services, I think we need to be straight that people with living and lived experience need to be at the heart of that. They need to be at the heart of the discussions, that decision-making process. Because we see more often than not, there's lots of harm reduction stuff gets delivered across the whole of Scotland. We don't always engage the living experience, the people who are still actively using a substance. We don't always engage them to ask their views or even to ask if that's the service that they would like to see. What happens is we start to deliver these services based on the funding, and then we just hope that we can fit them around the people with living and lived experience later down the line. That needs to change. We need to have living and lived experience at the heart of the discussions before we've even decided to commission services. And that's going to be a key part as a duty bearer for the government, that they start to look at the commissioning process through a human rights lens. And there'll be tough decisions that need to be took by that may mean some services don't continue to be funded or whatever. But if we're serious about this, and it's a priority, and some of yous that are on the webinar would have been at the launch last week and heard the First Minister talk about how important this is. So if we're serious about it and it's about a priority in making sure people's rights are met, the rights of people who use substances, then we need to be courageous and we need to be willing to make the difficult decisions that might include services not being funded or services delivering it slightly different. I think a key part for you, if you're on this as a duty bearer, is maybe the first step is looking at, do your clients currently understand their rights within the charter? Do our staff understand their rights? What are we going to do to upskill people and make sure they have the best understanding possible in order to make sure that we deliver services with a human rights approach and we prevent people from dying. We have an atrocious record over the last decade of people dying in Scotland. And this is what drove us in the change team. There was nobody in the change team who was in it because they were trying to get money for their organisations. We were all driven by the same passion. We want to keep people alive. We want to make their lives better. And we want to give people every opportunity there is possible and the best chance not to die early and sort of get to a place where they can live a life that they're comfortable with and it's no longer causing them harm. And within that right to life in the charter, there's various different parts that we talk about. So near the bottom, mate, we talk about the Orange Book or the Orange Guidelines, which anybody that works in the statutory services, prescribing services, will be aware of. This is seen as a sort of prescribing Bible, the Orange Book. But when we actually delve into that, I think what we need to do with the Orange Book is we need to go back to basics with it. Quite a lot of the time we'll hear bits quoted for it in order to help make the argument for people maybe been on a dose of 60 milligrams, millilitres to 120 of methadone. But what we don't hear is the Orange Book's quite clear that prescribing requires, I'll actually tell you what the quote says, the point, sorry. Treatment should always involve a psychosocial component to help support an individual's recovery. So we often hear about, but the Orange Guidelines say this is a therapeutic dose, 60 to 120. We need to go back to basics with it and also apply the other stuff the guidelines say. And the guidelines are quite clear, as I read to you there, about the psychosocial support should always be included. And it goes on further to talk about when you're looking to engage clients with mutual aid, that is almost always influenced by what the professional's attitude is towards mutual aid. So if you don't have a particularly good attitude towards mutual aid, whether it's a 12-step fellowship, smart recovery, whatever it may be, clients will pick up on that. So in the Orange Guidelines, it's quite clear that, and it talks about mutual aid should be supported through active linkage. And what they mean by that is through taking people along to mutual aid groups. Take them along, go to an open meeting, Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever it is. Take your client along to an open meeting, go with them, support them. It also makes reference to passive linkage, where it talks about it's not really sufficient just to give people a leaflet or give them a list of times when mutual aid meetings are available. That can be quite difficult for people to walk into, especially if it's a first time ever. So, in terms of as duty bearers, what your role is, I suppose, is if you're on this webinar, is to go back and ask the questions within your organisation. What are we doing to meet people's human rights? What are we doing? Are we doing enough? Are we delivering interventions that suit the service and suit the staff? Or are we delivering it because the clients and the community actually identified it? That was a need and that was something that they needed to support and help them for wherever they were at in their life. Now, I'm under the illusion that this isn't going to be a big job moving ahead, but we've got a charter. Alan demonstrated it quite clearly. The toolkit within the charter is fantastic. At the SDF, we've been using the toolkit, especially the FERN model. for a number of months now across the 12 engagement groups that we have in Scotland. And we've been using that to interrogate the issues that people raise. And we're getting people into the mindset of when they identify problems within their own treatment or a theme that develops within a particular area, we're getting them into the mindset of identifying them but looking at solutions. And then via the groups, we will take that back to the alcohol drug partnership management groups, which are made up of various different partners that work ways across all the different health boards in Scotland. And we will take that back and we'll say, here's the issue it's identified, here's a potential solution. And we'll track that through the action tracker that we use with the alcohol drug partnership. So that allows us to go back and review it and say, right, what was identified? What did we put as a solution? And how's that working? It's okay to try stuff and it doesn't work. That's fine. Try something else. So we need to get away from this idea that if we're doing anything new in Scotland, it needs to be a pilot. We don't need to pilot a lot of stuff. Let's just try it. Let's see if it works. If there's elements that work, fine. If there's elements that don't, change them and move away from them. Now, I've got about a minute left, so I'm just going to round this up. You seen the actual Charter of Rights there, fantastic resource, but myself, Louise, who's part of the change team, Alan, there's a whole big change team there, and I know I can speak on people's behalf. We would be more than happy to reach out and support any organisations that maybe have questions around this or just looking for a wee bit of guidance. Well, how do we put this right in place? How do we make this meet this right? Anything like that. But I hope this is just the beginning and we move forward and we start to view everything through a human rights approach, right through the commissioning process, right to the service development, service delivery, monitoring, evaluation, and the lived and living experience guys need to be at the heart of that. I can't say that strongly enough. If these guys and lasses aren't at the heart of it, we aren't doing it with them, we're doing it to them. And we've done stuff to people for far too long now. So I'll just thank everybody for coming along, listening in, and I look forward to working with many people that are currently on the webinar and a lot of other partners and colleagues across the board. I look forward to working with you to get this stuff rolled out and embedded, and we can all take responsibility to hold government public service bodies accountable on the behalf of the clients that we work with.
That was Jason Wallace, Living Experience Engagement Senior Officer at the Scottish Drugs Forum, speaking on a webinar entitled Do the Right Thing, Delivering the Charter of Rights for People Affected by Substance Use. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug
policy. For the Drug Truth
the
Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking
now,
you to examine our policy of
so
drug
long.
Prohibition.
So long.
The Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.